You're listening to Asbury University's Chapel Podcast, recorded live from our campus in Wilmore, Kentucky. Asbury's Chapel Service hosts speakers from around the world to inspire academic excellence and spiritual vitality. We hope you enjoy today's message.
Well, good morning, Asbury. Good to see you all. If we haven't met in class, I'm Professor Alex Mayfield of the Social Sciences and History Department, and this morning, I have the pleasure and the honor of welcoming our speaker, Dr. Veronica A. Gutierrez. Now, she comes to us as the first in our new Cushy Thacker speaker series, and it's made possible by a generous grant from a member of the community. And so this annual series will bring experts on history or social work to our campus to discuss how these disciplines can inform our faithful service to the world. And so, as our inaugural speaker, we could ask for no better than Dr. Gutierrez. As a historian who specializes in Mexican Catholicism, her career exemplifies the best of academic rigor and public engagement. She is a trained writer, an award-winning scholar, a sought-after speaker whose work challenges the many myths about Native peoples in the Americas. She is the founding director of the Great Books Program in Espanol for the online Angelicum Academy and a founding history faculty for the newly launched Hildegard College. She blogs about faith and history on the Anxious Bench at Patheos, and she is a homeschooling mom who is currently writing a children's chapter book on the Native visionary Juan Diego that introduces young readers to the beauties of Nahua or Aztec culture, as well as the difficulties of colonial life. She wears so many hats, and we are grateful to have her sharing with us today. Now, before I welcome onto the stage, I do want to remind you all that we're going to be having a talkback session at noon in the Daugherty Dining Room. So if you hear anything that you found interesting that you want to talk more about and dig deeper into, please come to that. And we also have an informal discussion at 4 p.m. in the Search Studio in the CLC, where she'll be talking with us about the pathways of history and professional development in the humanities. So don't miss those opportunities. If they're interesting to you, come and enjoy. And without further ado, let's welcome Dr. Gutierrez.
Totatzine, Oetztika, in Ilwikak, ma yeketonawalo, in Mokokatzin, ma walauf, in Mototokayo, ma chiwalo, in Tlatikpak, in Tikomen Kelitia. O our Father, you are in heaven. May it be praised, your name. May it come, your kingdom. May it be done on earth, what you want, as it is done in heaven. Today, give us our tortillas that every day, that always for us are needed. Pardon us our sins like we pardon them who offend us. Do not let go of us so that we do not fall into sin. Rescue us away from what is bad. Let it thus be done. Have any of you ever traveled somewhere where you don't know the language? Maybe you've gone on a mission trip and you can't communicate with the people you're called to serve. Maybe your heart was on fire with love for Christ and joy for your faith, but you couldn't share that? Well, that was exactly what happened 500 years ago this year when the first Christian evangelizers came to the mainland of the Americas to bring Christ. They were 12 Franciscan friars. They set sail on January 25th, 1524, the feast day of the conversion of St. Paul. This was deliberately chosen for the religious significance of the day. Now, they're originally meant to be 13, Christ and his 12 apostles, but at the last minute, one of the friars was elected to be superior general, minister general of the entire order, so he was not able to go. But these 12 arrived on the coast of Veracruz and walked barefoot to Mexico Tenochtitlan, which is today Mexico City. And as they walked, they heard this language that was rather strange to them. And it was a language with which I opened my talk. Show of hands, did anybody recognize what language that was? This is not widely spoken in the United States, but it is spoken by millions of people in the Americas, mostly in Mexico, but also in Guatemala and El Salvador. It's Nahuatl, and it is a language of the Mexica. You may know them as the Aztecs, which is actually incorrect. They never called themselves that. They are Mexica. Hence, we get the word Mexico. Mexico with a C-O means place of the Mexica. The third friar on the left there, Motilinia, he heard that word, Motilinia, Motilinia, and he asked somebody, what does that mean? And it meant poor person. He had his, you know, his Franciscan habit. He was barefoot. And he said, I love that. And he made it his name. So he changed his name to Fray Toribio de Benavente Motilinia. And he labored for decades in Mexico, wrote the first history of this region in 1541. Now, I don't want you to think that 1524 was the first arrival of any Christians to the Americas. They had obviously been coming since the earliest voyages of Columbus. But this was the first official commissioned group. They were commissioned by Charles V, who was a Holy Roman Emperor, by the Minister General of the Franciscan Order, and by the Pope. And they actually had special privileges the Pope had given them, because in Europe, you may know this, mendicants could not preach and they couldn't found churches without the permission of their local bishop. Well, there were no bishops in the Americas. There was nothing here. So they had this permission to come and to preach. Now, they weren't the first. The year before, in 1523, three friars had arrived, and they had labored in this region. So when these 12 walked and got to Mexico City, they looked around, and they said, you know, it looks just like these native people are engaging in their rituals like they always have. Like, what have you been doing for a year? And you know what these three friars told them? They said, we have been engaged in the theology that St. Augustine completely overlooked. And these 12, what are you talking about? They meant language acquisition. How can you even begin to interact with anyone until you can communicate? Now, the language here was pictographic, and this is part of what I want to talk about today. There are all sorts of challenges to bringing Christianity to the Americas. Physical challenges, emotional, spiritual. I'm here to talk about the linguistic difficulties. So the three things I'm going to focus on, these three issues, are how to codify a pictographic language, the issue with cultural differences that made it difficult to communicate Christian ideas, and even more challenging were these conceptual differences. And I want to start with language. So Mesoamerican peoples, their writing was pictographic, and these images were ideographs, so they could be interpreted various ways. This was writing. It was painting, but it was also writing. This was their form of writing. They were written on deerskin or tree bark, and they were accordion-style books called codices, codex in the singular, and they could only be read by specially trained priests. And depending on how the priest folded or unfolded the codex would depend on the interpretation. So you can see now it was a very flexible language, very different from alphabetic text. But just because only specially trained priests could read it didn't mean that the regular population was not aware of what was in their books. They had a tradition of evening recitations and chanting and even performing their stories. So this is called Inshoshit Inquicat, which means the flower, the song, or also poetry, and that's a metaphor for poetry and dance. Poetry was called Shoshiquicat, or the flower songs, flowery songs, which I think is a really beautiful way to think about poetry. So you can see images here from a couple of 16th century indigenous codices of native peoples playing their instruments, and performers would then perform their histories. They would perform lineages. So everyone was familiar with these texts. The tlaquilo, or the scribe, was one of the most important individuals in the community and was known as the master of the black ink, the red ink. Black ink together was not writing, red ink alone. I'm sorry, each on its own was not writing. You put the two together, it equals writing, and it's called intlali intlalpali. And so when Christians arrive, they recognize this, and so they talk about the Bible as the divine book with black ink, with red ink. And you think you've probably seen Bibles before where Christ's words are written in red, and so you have black and red. It's really kind of interesting how that worked out. So what do you do when you come to a place and there's pictographic writing? How do you begin to evangelize? Well, what some of the friars did when they initially arrived was said, well, let's use this. Let's use what they have. So this friar, Fray Jacobo de Estera, who was a Franciscan who came over in 1529, he was from France, from a noble family in France. He was known as a preacher, very learned man. He was a palace priest, actually, for the Holy Roman Emperor, Charles V. He decided to design a catechism that would sort of replicate what the native people were accustomed to. And you can see here on the right these little figures that sort of represent phrases or words of a Christian text. There was an issue with this, though, because it was he was using European grammar and European ideas. So it didn't quite translate, but at least it was an attempt to try to get people connect with the locals to teach them about Christianity. But this wasn't going to be enough. Eventually, they're going to need to codify the language. But they did continue to use this idea of catechisms for the entire colonial period. And this is a really nice one that I really like. It's a small, you can hold it in your hand, a little sort of pocket catechism. You can see there's no color. You would read it straight across the book. And these would be prayers that the friars, this is Fray Pedro de Ganta, he was one of the original three who came in 1523. He could carry it with him and use it anytime he wanted to talk and teach native people their prayers. But as I said, this wasn't enough. They needed to codify the language. It's very difficult to learn an entire new system. So the friars were sort of, they had experience with this in Europe. So in Spain, the Moors who are newly converted Muslims had invaded from northern Africa into southern Spain. In 10 years, they had gotten to the Pyrenees Mountains, and the Christians had to fight to get them out. These friars had worked with those Muslims to learn their language and Christianize them, so they had some experience. But when they came here, the language was so different because it was pictographic that they didn't really know where to start, so they prayed. What do we do, Lord? How do we learn this language? And they were inspired by Saint Joseph. And I like to think that maybe they saw an image of Joseph playing with the Christ child, and they thought, we're going to play with children. And so that's what they did. These were some of the most learned men from Europe. They knew Latin, they had been classically educated, possibly studied Greek, and they got down in the dirt, and they knelt beside these children, and they talked to them and learned from them. And the children were great teachers. Once they realized the Franciscans wanted to learn their language and write it down, they became their teachers. And I had a similar experience with this once in Mexico. My Spanish is pretty good now, but back when I started my doctoral work, it was pretty bad. And I was sitting in a comida, this long meal, at this home where I was staying, and I couldn't communicate with anyone. It was very frustrating. So I slipped out into the courtyard, and this little boy, about 8 or 9 years old, he was playing. And I said something to him in Spanish, and he kind of kept playing. I said something else. And then he looked at me strangely. He said, why can't you talk? And I said, I told him in my halting Spanish, I can't talk, but in English, I'm learning Spanish. And that was all he needed to start teaching me. So he had a pine nut in his hand. He's like, piñón, piñón. And then he's just running around telling me about things in the courtyard. And the historian that I am, I was immediately sort of transferred in my mind to this period of the friars sitting down with children and learning from them. So it took a really long time. And the friars even say in their memoirs what they would learn one day, they'd go home, they'd write it down, they'd talk to each other. The next day, it didn't make any sense. So this took a long time. But within 10 years, they had a draft of the Nahuatl language. In 7 years, by 1531. And then eventually, they put together and published in 1547 the first vocabulary of La Lengua Mexicana. On the left there, and you can see in the middle, there's an example of the singular of the word, the plural of the word, and what the meaning is, and also some grammatical structures. Nahuatl is a very strange language. And when we get to some Nahuatl, I'm going to show you how that works. Beyond that, another friar, Alonso de Molina, published something in 1555, a vocabulary of grammar, and then in 1571 published an updated version which has a Spanish Nahuatl in one section and then the Nahuatl Spanish in the other section. And that book is so important that to this day, scholars like me still consult it. So that's really significant. So let me talk about some of these cultural challenges here, and I can tell you a little bit about how Nahuatl works. So you recall when I read this part of the Our Father, talking about our tortillas instead of bread. You might wonder, why in the world are we talking about tortillas? Well, there's a very simple answer to that, which some of you may know, that there was no bread in the Americas. There was no wheat. Wheat is a European introduction. So if you're talking about give us something we eat daily, well, the native people eat tortillas daily. So the friars had to accommodate to that and change prayers in a way that would make sense. So you see here on panel 79, it's blue. So there's blue corn. You can make tortillas. I've eaten them in the state of Puebla in Mexico. But also blue is a color of preciousness in this culture. So you can imagine you're talking about this precious bread from God, right? These tortillas, this precious food from God. And then if you look at 78, you can see there when it says give us, that someone is, it appears as if someone's sort of giving the bread in a way to perhaps imitate the Eucharist, giving out the Eucharist at Mass. And some of the friars, Fray Pedro de Gante, one of the original three, he used to call the Eucharist Tlatio Chihuali Tlatzcatzintli, or the Blessed Little Tortilla, not only for its shape, but also for its importance. And so the way that Nahuatl works So you have a root word. It's very difficult. So you have, let's say, imagine this is your root word. You have prefixes in front of the word. You have suffixes behind the word. When you put on a suffix, you have to chop off the ending. So if you're learning Nahuat, you have to take away the prefixes, take away the suffixes, then rebuild the root word, figure out what it means, and then add it all together. So at the top, the T-O prefix means our. The root word is tlaxcali, but you take that off, so it's to tlaxcal, for our tortillas. Another thing that I wrote here at the bottom is that Nahuat has a lot of paired similes or metaphors, a lot of parallelism. So if you see here, give us, you know, today, our tortillas that every day, that always, for us, are needed. There's a lot of emphasis there in repetition. That's because that's the way that Nahua language worked, and the Nahuas wouldn't really be able to remember these prayers. It wouldn't really resonate with them unless they had this sort of a repetition. So the friars accommodated that and changed the prayers up, and they're a lot longer in Nahua than we are used to in Latin or in other vernacular. Another change or challenge that was even more difficult were these conceptual differences. So for example, the idea of Christian sin did not exist in Mesoamerican culture. So we have a sense that we can sin interiorly, like our thoughts, or you know, we have a personal moral responsibility for what we do. That didn't exist. So amongst Mesoamerican cultures, they had a sense of sin, or tlatacoli, the word the friars decided to use, as something that was physical damage, filth. So if you don't sweep your homes and get the dirt out in front of your home altars every morning, that's committing tlatacoli. It's something broken, something disordered, or even a crime. But it didn't mean something would happen to you as a result. It might happen to your daughter, to your husband, to your neighbor. So there was a different community emphasis here. So when the friars were thinking of a word, how do we try to put these prayers into words? They chose tlatacoli, but you can imagine it caused a lot of problems because the conceptual differences were so great. So it took a lot of time for Native people to really understand what sin was. You see on panel 84, the word for sin is a line with some squiggles because it's that sense of disorder, right? This is a 17th century text. And it was an indigenous tlaquilo, a scribe, who painted the images. You see on panel 86, there's a person, right, with a squiggle inside. So you see how these images then relate to what the words are. You see also in 89, there's another tlatacoli. So at the bottom, again, how Nahuatl works, tlatacoli, you put the to in front of it for our, and then you drop the ending, to tlatlacol. And that's how you get that word. There was another conceptual difference, and this one was a lot more challenging. It was the concept of the devil. So Mesoamerican deities were much like ancient Greek deities, if you've studied Greek mythology, sort of capricious, kind of become involved, but they weren't necessarily all good or necessarily all bad. So when the friars come and they try to talk about, you know, God being all good, that was difficult, but then to think of a creature that was all bad was even more challenging for them. So what they used, you can see on number 92, they used the word tlacatecolot for demon. But that actually means this horned owl man, or this owl person, or person owl. And it was this creature who would come out at night and sort of, if you committed tlatacoli, if you did some crime or committed some disorder or disharmony, would come out and cause illness or possibly death. And you can imagine that doesn't really work in a Christian context because we don't think the devil only comes out at night. We don't think that he has the power to kill us. God is, you know, oversees that. But this is the closest that they could get initially. So you see in this line, rescue us away from what is bad, right? And there's the tlatacolot right there. Now eventually over time, Native people are going to come to understand this means a Christian demon. But what the friars did sometimes as well is they just put the Spanish word, demonio, or they would use the Latin word because the concepts didn't work. Certain things they didn't even try. If it was, imagine the Trinity. We don't even understand the Trinity. How can you explain the Trinity in a language that they have no concept? Something like if they were praying the Hail Mary, which is the Catholic prayer, they would just use the Latin or the Spanish, Santa Maria. So you can see there are a lot of different ways that bringing Christianity to the Americas was really challenging. And it wasn't just the physical difficulties of coming across the ocean, leaving everything you've ever known behind, and not knowing if you're going to live or die on the voyage, or perhaps be killed when you get here. There was also the spiritual difficulties of being separated from your home communities. These Franciscans were used to living in large communities, having the opportunity to pray daily, and then having opportunity to go off and recollect and go on retreat for a while and then come back and pray. They were not trained to go out and evangelize. This was not their calling, and they had not entered the order to do that. But out of holy obedience, they did. And they brought Christ to people by taking the time to do whatever they could to learn. So I think we owe a lot to these first Christians who came and brought Christianity to the Americas. And especially, we should be grateful for the fact that they were willing to do whatever it took, to get into the dirt and play with children, to spend hours and hours at night thinking about language, to try to dissect the grammatical structures of a pictorial language, to give up sleep, to give up prayer time, to give up other things, because they had this very important mission of bringing Christ to the Americas. So I think I want to end here with a challenge to all of you, to think about the example of these Franciscans, that they were willing to do whatever they needed to do to bring Christ to someone who didn't know him, and to learn what they needed to learn to do that with those with whom they could not communicate when they initially arrived. So I'm just going to leave you all with that challenge, thinking about what can we do? How far will we go to teach, to bring Christ to those who do not know him? Thank you.